So this episode's sponsor is Hired. So that's hired.com. Hired is a platform for hiring top developer and designers. If you're a designer and you're looking for a new job, it's a great place to go to look for a new job. You get an average of 5 offers, all within the application. You know, companies like Facebook, Uber, Stripe, and Thoughtbot are all on there looking for, you know, designers and developers. You get job offers with your salary or equity up front before you even do an interview. So if, you know, the salary isn't up to your standards, you don't have to waste any time. They have full-time and contract opportunities. So I totally think you should sign up. Listeners of Tentative will get a $2,000 bonus just for signing up.
Wow.
Using the show's link. That's pretty
that
awesome.
That is amazing.
I will take 50% of that. So, you know,
where does
you can send your checks to me.
Where does that leave me?
You can go to hired.com/tentative. We'll put that in the show notes, hired.com/tentative. And that's how you'll get that bonus. Hello, this is Tentative Podcast, where we discuss product design. I'm Kyle, and with me is the ever so cheerful
Red Alamedin. I'm not very cheerful today.
You're always cheerful.
It's us. I think you know us at this point.
Well, maybe that we have some new people listening. Hello, new people listening.
Hi, thank you for listening.
Thanks for the download and the listen. Cool. Let's get into it.
So I want to talk a little bit about our job and how actually what do we consider ethical and how does that manifest itself in the work we do, and when we use websites or apps, at what point we look at something and think this is not right, what is right and what is wrong as far as our the ethical stance of you as a designer. I brought up dark patterns because they're usually regarded as one of the areas where things are not right. You should not be using your skills to actually implement those patterns.
Yeah, they're unethical. They're evil things.
They're not the dark side. They're dark side. They're black. If you like categorizing things into white and black, then yeah, they're bad. But let's actually backtrack a little bit and just first I want to make sure that you're still using technology. You know what a website is.
I am still using technology. I haven't been using my computer much, but I've been using my phone a lot more, and I've been surprised at how much I can get done on my phone. I also, a couple weeks ago, bought a watch.
An Apple Watch?
Yep.
Why? It's quite late to get an Apple Watch. Late in its product life cycle.
It's in the middle. They're supposed to release a new one in the fall. I don't know if I have a good reason of why I bought one now. I think I just got over a lot of the reasons why I didn't get one. I've also changed my mind again on tracking my health. stuff. So I went back to using my Fitbit and saw the watch as an opportunity to kind of be better about tracking it. So that was one of the reasons.
Fair enough.
The other reason, I think we talked about this before, but I used for the longest time, I used my phone as my clock, as my watch, I guess.
Yeah.
I used to wear a watch before I bought, or even after I bought the first iPhone that I got, and using the phone as a watch now or a clock now has been kind of awful. When I'm at my house, I like to leave my phone outside of my personal body, put it somewhere so that I'm not always checking it, so that I'm paying attention to my kids, my wife, and actually interacting with them instead of when I check the phone, the thumbprint thing is so quick that it just automatically jumps into my phone and I get distracted quite easily. So the easiest solution there for me is just leave my phone lying around. And I guess you could have said, why don't you just buy a regular watch? And I guess I could have done that too.
Yeah.
I'm sure part of it too is like, I'm a fanboy of Apple. I like their products and I don't know.
Yeah, the only reason I'm asking why now is there might be a new version sometime this year. And
yeah, I think they were talking about the fall.
Yeah, yours will feel outdated.
Yeah, I'm not too worried about that.
All right. I'm actually waiting for... I've never owned one. I used one, but I've never owned an Apple Watch. And I'm waiting for the second iteration because it's usually a lot better than the first one. So, yeah, that's why I've been holding off. And also... It's nice to have a watch, and I used it for a couple of weeks, and I totally saw a little bit of improvement in few things. Like, you don't have to take the phone to look at the time, and also, like, it's actually a weird situation I ended up in, because the watch at the same time, it allows you to not like look at your phone all of the time. So let's say it's less like distraction, but at the same time, it distracts a lot. I'm not sure if I'm making sense, but it felt like this weird, like, am I being more productive or am I being more distracted? I don't know. Right.
I think it's totally up to you. So I have on my phone, I have almost all my notifications turned off, except for text messages and phone calls. And so I have the same thing on my watch. I even actually turned off the notifications for phone calls because unless I have my phone, I'm not going to be talking to my watch as a phone. It seems sort of silly.
Yeah.
So I don't get that many notifications on my watch. So I'm not using, like, I know a lot of people like it for that, but I'm not using that part of it.
Are you using like any apps that that you think are really well done and perfect for the watch?
Yeah, I've been using OmniFocus a lot more for my tasks, and so there's a few things about the OmniFocus watch app that are really nice for such a small screen. It's been interesting using the watch and seeing some of the design decisions for the small screen.
Yeah.
But for OmniFocus, it basically shows, you know, a very dumbed down version of my to-do lists that are either flagged or due today. And that might be just like more helpful for me because it's more in my face and I need that. I found the Apple Weather app to be interesting, like the way that they've designed the 24-hour weather.
Yeah.
With the circle to be really interesting.
Do you use any complications?
No.
Okay. I was thinking you might be using some MLB or... I don't know if it exists, but I was expecting you to be taking advantage of that.
The MLB app.
Yeah.
The MLB app is like, I downloaded it to see what it is. And it basically just gives you scores.
Yeah. Isn't that a good use case already?
It is. I mean, like, but am I going to check that on my watch?
Maybe not.
I don't know. I think the use case for the watch is, like, for, at least for me, is relatively small, especially since, like, I think the rumors, so I did check to see what rumors are there for the watch for the next version. I think what they're trying to do is make it less tied to the phone.
Yeah.
That, to me, like, wasn't a reason to not get it now. The reason that I would want to, like, weight would be if they had a smaller, a thinner watch, which I also don't know how much I care about. But the use cases for it, for the watch, like, there's especially since you need to have your phone on you to use it.
Yeah.
Like, to me, they're like super, super slim. I have noticed that, like, in the car, getting text messages on my watch feels a lot safer.
Yeah.
I don't know if it actually is, though.
Yeah, I have no idea. I mean, you're still.
My attention's still divided.
Yeah, your attention is still going to a different place than the road ahead of you.
Right.
So, yeah. I mean, I'm glad that you're back to tracking your health and that sort of stuff. That's good. Let's talk about this again 3 months from now. See if you're still doing it. And which band did you get? The sports band or?
I got two. So I like to go running. So I have one sports band. I also have the, I'm going to butcher this, the loop, the mayonnaise.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the mayonnaise. Let's just call it that.
The Milanese. Man, it sounds so much better when you say it.
The Milanese loop, I think.
Yeah.
Cool. So I'll be looking forward hearing about your findings and your.
That was a total tangent.
Right? It was. No, it's all right. I think we should allow ourselves to have multiple topics in one episode. It's all right. And like the topic I came up with is
dark
not
patterns.
It's not something that I see that every day, and I usually just go and complain on Twitter. That's like what I do, and there's no debate or like controversy. I mean, dark patterns are just that, and they're bad. But I just wanted to hear. Like if you have any experiences with situations where you were asked to implement some of those dark patterns, or you know, just you'll be the one responsible for adding them. And there's a spectrum. It's like there's a big difference between, say, having a form that. Do you have any examples of dark patterns, actually?
I was gonna say we should probably define what a dark pattern is. Like, yeah. We've just been bashing it as like evil, right, and bad design. But so for me, dark pattern is a design pattern that has been created to trick users into doing things that they don't necessarily want to do.
Yes.
So the immediate example for me is like when I sign up for an account automatically subscribing me to a newsletter.
Newsletter. Yeah. This is a very common one.
Yeah, it is. So that's like, and it's also like not that. In the scheme of things, it's not that big of a deal for a dark pattern. Like there are much worse.
Yeah.
But it is a dark pattern. Like when someone's signing up, you're giving them an extra action to do to unsubscribe from emails.
Yeah. Or this is just one example of the many examples where something is checked by default. So it's opt out instead of opt in. Mm-hmm. And this is actually a category on its own. Like a lot of websites, especially those who sell where you buy stuff, they might add a bunch of other things. Like think of like maybe travel agencies or when you buy plane like tickets or that sort of stuff. Like, and they add a bunch of stuff that you don't want, like insurances and whatnot.
And you have to opt out of buying those insurances of opting in.
And they might make it hard for you to do so. Like the check mark would be the only clickable element. Like you can't click the entire label. So even if you want to remove it, you need to be precise enough. You can't remove it by accident. So that sort of thing. Also, there are others where they make it almost impossible for you to delete your account just by having this loop of contact support. And support gets back to you with, you know, a link that you have to click, and you click that link and you end up in another form, which also asks you to contact support. And you just like give up at some point. Like, I don't want to delete I want to delete my account, but I just give up because this is taking too much effort. And I think those are like, compare this to a button at the bottom of your profile saying delete account. Right. There's a huge difference in terms of user experience between these two.
One of the things that comes to mind when you talked about removing your account is Facebook does something that is somewhat, you know, dark. And when you try to delete your account on Facebook, it basically does, are you sure? Are you sure? And then it shows you photos of all your friends and they say, oh, look at all these people that'll miss you.
Yeah,
so they have this way of trying to like sucker you back in and make you feel guilty for leaving Facebook.
No, that's debatably not a smart thing to do. Because when I closed my Facebook account, I got that thing, I think. And all the photos were actually of things I hate. I was like, yeah, of course. That's why I'm quitting this thing, because of people like this. Like people I actually don't even know. Like, who are these people? I don't know. I'm not sure what I'm doing here. So yeah, but I get it. It's not. I wouldn't put this as a dark pattern. It's more like a gray pattern.
Yeah, I think too. Like there are also applications that I know that won't let you delete your account unless you call someone. That to me is a huge dark pattern.
Yeah, yeah, that one is pretty bad.
And that goes even to like, I know cable companies here in America, they will make you call them to cancel your account with them. And then while you're trying to cancel, they'll try to either upsell you or keep you, you know, subscribed.
This actually is not a thing that happens only in the US. I think it's a common trait between all like carriers and fiber company, it, like telecommunication companies. Mm-hmm. It happens a lot. It happened to me recently, and I ended up not canceling because I got a discount on my internet connection. I mean, it works. But dark patterns, like, they're all over the place, not just in UI, but also in business practices. I think we want to focus on the ones that are related to UI, like things that are made to trick you. Like, I can think of examples where you want to click something, but it's set up in a way that that click will trigger something else. Like, right. When you get those pop-ups or whatever they call, like modal, like ad, like things, and you click the close button. And that close button ends up being a fake close button. So when you click it, you end up in a different site or something like that. Or you try to click the backdrop area, but that does nothing. Or just, you know, like basically trying to trick the user to do things that they don't want to, but they will end up doing anyway because that's where the UI leads them.
Yeah, I think a good place to look for dark patterns to know what they are is there's a website called darkpatterns.org. Have you ever gone there?
Yeah, I've been there before.
And it goes over a bunch of the different dark patterns that have been submitted and actually shows examples of sites that have done this.
Yeah. And just before we started like talking about what are dark patterns, I was talking about a spectrum. And that spectrum is basically, they're not like, not everything is the same level of darkness. Like, there are some things that are really bad, like the one I just cited, where like you have these obnoxious ads or things like that that you try to...
For me, the worst ones are when you trick people into paying money that they don't necessarily want to pay. So like where, you know, you're defaulted into like in insurance that you don't necessarily need,
or a renewable subscription,
or a renewable subscription, or hitting costs,
or saying that your service is free, and then there's an asterisk and at the bottom of the footer saying it's free for 3 days, and then we charge you per hour or some stupid thing like
or,
this,
or hiding, you know, some places will hide the free option, to encourage you to.
So these are like the extreme, but there are other things that are on the other extreme, which you cited a couple of them, but there are some things that they are hostile to the user, even though they won't, they are not that bad from that perspective. But like, for instance, like having six like call to action buttons in the landing page, or having like making some user flow not serve the goal of the user, but the goal of the business. Like, I want all users who want to create an account to go through this step where they give me their phone number, even though they don't need it to use the service, but I want it for my marketing purposes. That's a dark pattern.
All dark patterns are because of that. They're all serving the business needs over the user's needs. So anything that you put in to serve the business over the user is a dark pattern in my eyes. That's why, like, going back to the Facebook example of leaving Facebook, like, that's still, to me, that's still a dark pattern, because clearly someone has the intent of leaving Facebook and they're trying to trick them back into using Facebook, or at least not deleting their account.
Yeah, yeah. It's one extra step that the user has to go through. And why I wanted to actually talk about this spectrum is that I thought about we might not deal with the extremes of, you know, the ones that extort people or trick them into paying money. But we, or at least I, definitely dealt with cases in the, you know, the less dark section of this, the part of the spectrum where the client would want to have this extra step or this extra thing to serve some business goal. And I had to push back on that. And or sometimes I just downright refuse to do something just because to me it's like some things I just don't want to do at all. Like, mm-hmm. for instance, like I typically try to avoid like floating or fixed things in web design where like as you scroll, there's always this button in your face that says you have to upgrade or something like that. And in some cases it's all right. I mean, it's acceptable, but in most cases it feels to me like you're like nagging the user to do something that they might not even be ready to take that decision. And I usually push back on those a lot. And I was wondering if you had similar experiences and whether you like at what point you actually really push back on these.
I can't really think of any right now off the top of my head. So I don't think I've, at least I don't know that I've had to deal with them, or maybe I've just implemented semi-dark patterns and not thought too deeply about it.
Okay. Like, I mean, it's not, sometimes it's not as easy as saying, oh, this is clearly a dark pattern. Like, especially if it's vital for the business, then you can actually use better wording or design it in a way that explains what's going on to the user. So as to just explain to the user that it's an inconvenience and we're aware of it, but there is a business need that requires this to be there. Like, for instance, a required phone number or this other thing that the user has to go through to be able to use your service. One that I personally consider is not a great pattern to use is requiring the users to provide information before even they know what they're signing up for. Like, mm-hmm. oh, if you want to use our app, you've got to sign up first, or you've got to give us all these personal like information before you can actually start using the app. And I typically tend to push back on that a lot. And some others might not consider that a dark pattern, but to me, it's not probably one, but it serves the business. And it's not, as a user, I don't want to be giving my information to companies or to apps or services that I don't even trust or know.
Right. For me, like, it serves the business, or at least a lot of the apps that I've helped design and build, it helps the business lead customers into their funnel if they can play around with the app before they, you know, fill out a long form. I think the sign-up forms generally are like a barrier to entry and will cause hesitation for sign-up. So if we could eliminate that and show the user that the application is solving their problem before they even sign up, and then encourage them to sign up once we've given them that proof, I think that's best for the business and best for the user.
Do you consider it our job to educate clients and push back when they're okay? Because like some people just don't know, or at least they're not aware of the harmful effects of not being honest with your users. Do you consider that our job, or you think that we should basically roll with it and just try to make it look as good as possible?
I think it's our job to help them build the best business possible. And the way that you do that is by finding customers or finding people to use your application. So tricking people into using your application isn't going to, you know, make them want to use it.
But don't you think that that's not really a criteria? Like, we use a lot of things that we don't like just because we have to. If I'm going to buy a plane ticket, I'm going to go through this company. Or for businesses, whether you want to use it or not is not the top metric. Not, I'm not saying all businesses, but for a category of businesses, it's all about the numbers. So if we are selling this much, we don't care if people are enjoying it or not. The numbers are going up. Everything is great. And I'm not saying this is a good thing. I'm saying it's short-sighted and it's bad. And people who are running these businesses should probably take a step back and look at things in a, you know, look at the bigger picture. Like, there are a lot of businesses who take that approach. But at the same time, especially in some industries, we still end up with a lot of dark patterns. Like, I'm thinking of finance and travel and insurance. All of these industries, they tend to have a lot of these things.
Right.
And still people go to their websites and use them.
I have a question for you then. Do you have any loyalty to any travel agency or service?
No.
So when you're looking to buy a flight, are you going to go to a certain airline? Or are you just looking for essentially the cheapest?
Not always the cheapest. I'm looking for the easiest and cheapest. So, okay, so the highest value for money.
Your schedule and the cheapest to that schedule.
Yeah, exactly.
If I told you right now that you were going to go buy a computer, where would you go buy it?
Probably Apple Store.
Okay. Where's the difference there?
I guess the difference is that, I mean, Apple won me as a customer, I guess.
Right.
They're not always perfect, but they're better than the competition. So
you know that Apple's not going to do any of those dark patterns, or at least you hope that they're not.
Oh,
you trust them as a company to build a good product. Whereas, like,
yes, I do.
A lot of these airlines have implemented these dark patterns. You know that they don't really care about you as a customer. They're really like, they're looking at their bottom line more than your experience. And as a user, we've gotten away from actual web applications, but I think that's
all right.
It's totally okay, because we're experienced designers.
We shouldn't talk about web design just as, like, you know, a thing you look at the screen. It affects a lot of things in life, so it's all right.
So, like, there, to me, there's a clear indication of, like, one company who is, you know, catering to their users and building a strong user base. Like, there are people that love Apple and love their products. I think we can count ourselves as being part of that group. There are people that don't like Apple products too, but you don't have that same kind of passion for most airlines. Like, I know, I believe Virgin has somewhat of that passion. Like, there are people that do love Virgin because their experience, they've treated the customer first, at least.
No, I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, if you care about the customer, you will get them. You will get customers from your competitors. There's no discussion about it. What I was trying actually to question is, what can we do to make, like, both as users and also as people who build things, who build products, what can we do to make this more clear to, like, businesses who only care about the numbers? It's easy to, you can say it like this and it's all great, but I feel like a lot of times it just doesn't work. When you try to convince people that this, especially when they look at the landscape and they see that everyone else is doing the same thing, and they usually think of it backwards, where they say, you know what, if I end up being the first, I might actually lose some clients at first, which they might, you know, when they will update their product or their workflow, their user flow. In the next couple of days, it might actually show a decrease. But because it's not the sort of stuff that you change and you immediately see the gain. Like, trust takes time to build.
Right.
And a lot of them are, like, not, they're too short-sighted to see that. So I was just wondering, like, why I do wonder about this, because it helps me as someone who helps a lot of businesses ship their products. It helps me have a good, like, argument to convince them. Like, that they should look a little bit more into the future, not just immediate gains. And to be honest, I haven't had a lot of issues with a lot of our clients are great and we love them. But as soon as I leave the sphere of thought about our clients, I just start seeing, like, things that are wrong all over.
Yeah, but I also think that is also, like, select our clients and our clients select us. So there's some sort of filtration going on there, and hopefully we're getting clients that understand that they're, you know, going to be in their whatever business they're in for a while, and they'd rather build for the long term rather than the immediate short term gain. It's a very good point that you're making, that all of these dark patterns, they're certainly short sighted, they're for short term gain, and they're not thinking about long term trust, long term brand equity. they're not thinking about the user past the immediate plus one of that metric. And I think that's where like looking at a lot of those metrics, looking at the wrong metrics, can get people into trouble. And it also goes back to like things that we also can't measure. Like you can't measure, I guess you probably can. You can measure like your dedication to Apple by how much you've bought over the years.
Yeah.
But it's a little bit harder to measure that because you need time.
Yeah, it's harder to measure and harder like to keep track of. Whereas like sales, it's easy. You just look at your bank account.
Right.
This is a very valid point. I just give you an example. I've been using this company that sells domain. I will not name the company, but they've been notorious for you try to buy a domain and they try to upsell you in the checkout thing. Like I think there are five or six extra things you get. Like, oh, you want privacy? You have, and I think it's checked by default. Like you get privacy, but you have to pay another extra $5 or something. And they check an email like inbox and a lot of other stuff.
What about the WordPress one click plugin?
Yeah.
Do you pay for that too?
Yeah, no, I didn't. Of course, I have to uncheck that as well. But I used them for 3 years, and I used to have all my domains there. And one day I realized that there is something better. There's another company who cares about their customer, and they don't try to upsell you. And they're very, like, when you look at their checkout, it's very honest in what it's trying to do. Like, here's what you got. Here is what you are paying for. And we have these extra services, but they're here if you want them. And I moved all of my stuff there and I never looked back. And the thing to notice is that this the new domain registrar I'm using is actually a little bit more expensive than the other one. But I'm totally fine paying that extra if I know that I can trust these people. And I've been recommending it to all other people. So,
right. You know, so like they're, in their case, they're making more money. They're getting positive recommendations, so you're inputting more leads for them. There's so much, like, because they had a good experience, that they're gaining so much more out of it. And it's like interesting that you brought up that. I think I would hope most people know the other company, the one that's trying to upsell you and automatically subscribing you to some of the things that are upsells. I've seen a lot of people complain about that one domain registrar.
Yeah, so and they're trying to fix that, but I feel it's too late. The damage is done. Like, right. When your image is damaged, it's just hard to restore it.
Right, and so they did all of that for the short term, and I'm sure they saw a lot of profit because of it, because people weren't paying attention when they were signing up or were trying to sign up really quickly. And because of that, you know, they saw a short-term gain because of it. But like now they're probably trying to repair a lot of their relationships, because I'm sure as you recommend your current domain host, you're probably telling people to stay away from the other one.
Oh yeah. Usually it goes hand in hand.
Right.
Like, so you might use this one, but definitely don't use this one sort of thing.
So they've like very negatively affected their bottom line for short term gain. Right. I think it's super interesting. Like, we brought up the case of our cable or internet.
Yeah.
That to me is one of the places that is total commodity, and whichever company is giving me the cheapest service, like that's honestly the one that I'm willing to go with, because
they all suck, right?
I have the feeling that I'm getting ripped off from each one of them. Yeah, especially like I've done the thing that you did before, and I used to do it regularly. Just I would fake quit on them just to get the better deal, because I knew if I did that, they would give me a better deal. And to me, that's so broken. That's such a broken experience that I would like remind myself to call up the cable company after I've been with them for a year to, you know, get a better deal on my cable, because like, I
No, I totally get it. Before we conclude, I think the question is, what do you think the role of product designers in this?
I think it's to look at, you know, the long-term and short-term goals. Like there could be use cases for, I'm sure there, like for Facebook, like a lot of people hit that page and see their friends and they're like, oh, well, maybe I will use this a little more. And maybe in some of those cases, it does affect them in a positive way, right?
Yeah.
What we should avoid doing is doing some of those, in my view, those the really bad ones, the ones that like you're taking other people's money by default and not letting them like opt out or.
No, I totally get it. But it's just, well, there's one thing that I would like to mention is that dark patterns is not just what we talked about today. I would actually say that lack of accessibility is actually a dark pattern. If your website or app is not accessible just because you don't want to spend more time developing it so that, you know, so that you stay within budgets, that to me is a dark pattern. And there are so many others that we actually try to consider that. I mean, we learn to consider that they're not. They're just like, you know, compromises that we make. In fact, I think I should have brought this up a little bit earlier in the episode, because this is the entire point I'm trying to make, is that a lot of things that I like that should be considered dark patterns are not considered dark patterns today. Like having everything, for instance, run in a like JavaScript environment where the user would be in a lot of trouble if they are either, you know, have that, they have bad connection or they have slow computers or things like that. To me, that's a dark pattern. Like if I need to cancel my account now because I will be billed tomorrow if I don't, I need to be able to do it regardless of what conditions I have, like regardless of how good my internet is, and not being able to do that to me, it's also a dark pattern. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I think, I mean, I'm trying to go back to my definition of what a dark pattern was. So it's to, for me, I'm not so sure that that is a dark design. To me, that's just bad design.
Okay. Interesting.
Bad design patterns. For me, dark patterns are things to trick people into doing things that they don't want to do.
So you believe that there must be some sort of bad intent behind?
Not necessarily. Like for some of those, I'm sure there's not bad in
I think in a lot of them there's some sort of right. Business servant
bad intent.
Like
right. No. Yeah. For me, it's like you're not trying to trick, by using some sort of JavaScript framework, you're not trying to trick someone into doing something they don't want to do. I guess you're tricking them into using JavaScript.
Yeah, it might be a stretch.
But I don't know that yeah, that's kind of a stretch.
It might
for
be
me.
A stretch, but I'd rather err on the side of consider it a dark pattern than saying, oh, that's all right. You don't need to have an accessible website. Don't put alt tags on your images. That's fine. Like it's gonna save us time. Or to me, those are dark patterns because you might not have bad intent because you don't actually fully grasp that some people do not have the same conditions that you have, and it might not be intentional, but it's still harmful to those people, and that's another type of harm. It's not just money. It's like if I struggle to read this important part of the site, then you're harming me as a user. And it might be bad design, but bad design is like a superset of things. Like dark patterns are also bad design.
Right.
They're just a subset of bad design. So I would still, might be a stretch, but I would still consider, or at least like why I'm saying this is because if we keep basically accepting more and more of these things that are harmful to the user over time without considering them like dark patterns or like that things that are like, you know, bad things, taboos, then I think at some point we will basically be very lax and the work we will be doing will be fairly harmful to a category of users or to all users. And we wouldn't even be aware of it. And I think that's a bigger problem because the obvious ones, they're obvious. Like, yeah, you don't want to trick people like to pay more money. But the less obvious ones, they're probably more harmful in some cases. And I keep coming back to accessibility because it's an easy one. But there are others as well. And I guess what the point I'm trying to drive across is that it's all right to be extra vigilant to what might be actually harmful to the user and push back on that. Even if your boss doesn't agree or your client doesn't agree or, I don't know, someone in your organization is against it. And I know that designers, they're not always in a position of power in their companies, but that's not an excuse to not push hard against these things. Because yes, having a business that's profitable and all of that is important. Like you will lose your job if not, but doing it in a way that goes against the desires and needs of the user is a recipe for like disaster. It could work for, well, I don't know, a month, two, three, a year or two, but it's not sustainable because at some point someone else will actually come and do the things you didn't do, and you will see your users moving to that someone, like to that competitor, as soon as that happens. So yeah, my suggestion is people should, designers specifically, product designers should keep an eye on these things, and they should err on the side, you know, of protecting the user more than the side of protecting the business.
I agree with all of that. And I think the takeaway there is to make sure that you're looking at the long-term trust of your product and enjoyment of your product, as opposed to short-term gains where, you know, it might help certain metrics, but it won't hurt, it'll harm you in the long term, hurt the business in the long term, and hurt the user in the short term.
Absolutely. This was episode 23 of Tentative. You can find the show notes for this episode at tentative.fm/23. You can tweet at tentativefm, one word, or send us emails to hosts@tentative.fm. Yeah, if you like the show, please rate us on iTunes and tell your friends about it. We'd love to get more listeners because there's a lot of wisdom going on here, and we want everyone to take advantage of it. Yeah, and thank you for listening.
I'd also say if you have any suggestions on topics that you'd like to hear from us, feel free to email us in. Again, it's hosts@tentative.fm.
Yes, or Twitter as well. We keep an eye on the account.
Great.
Cool.
Peace out.
Peace.